Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Actor Jesse Eisenberg is probably best known for his Oscar-nominated performance as Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg in the 2010 film The Social Network.
Match.com for Harvard.
Can I continue with my deposition?
You know, you really don't need a forensics team to get to the bottom of this. If you guys were the inventors of Facebook, you'd have invented Facebook.
Well, The Social Network put Eisenberg in the spotlight as an actor, but he's also been writing plays and short stories for years. And now he's out with his first book of fiction. It's called Bream Gives Me Hiccups and Other Stories. He'll be talking about it tomorrow night at the Brattle Theater. And we spoke with Jesse Eisenberg a little earlier this week, and we started by asking him to read an excerpt from My Mother Explains the Ballet to Me, one of the stories in his new book.
Okay. All right, so this is from the perspective of the mother.
Okay.
Why can't you stand like that guy on stage? Look at his posture. Forget that he's black for a second and just look at his body. His shoulders are back. He has confidence. You look like you're apologizing even before you open your mouth. You walk in a room, no one notices. He walks on stage, we're all looking. Look at him. He's like a walking picture. You know, I never dated a black man. Your father was so attractive in college. It stifled me, in a way. I used to be very progressive. Stop nodding off. What did you do all day that you're so tired? Are you sweating? You smell like you're sweating. Well, look who she's dancing with now. Kel Surprise. You see? When you stand up straight, she takes your rose. It's just about confidence you project, okay? If you had confidence, people would notice you. There was a kid in a wheelchair back in Elmhurst, but he was so funny, he knew how to laugh at himself, and in a way, we all liked him. What she's doing now is called a pas de chat. It's French, and we all know how you did in that class, so I'll just solve the mystery and tell you that it means step of the cat. Ah, look at that. She just fell. Ha, clumsy. I could do that. Step of the cat. I used to dance. Did I tell you that? I could have been successful if I hadn't had your sister. She tore my body apart. And she's still destroying me in a way. I could have done that. It looks harder than it is.
That's Jesse Eisenberg reading an excerpt from the story, My Mother Explains the Ballet to Me. It's from his new book, Bream Gives Me Hiccups and Other Stories. That's one of those readings where I was laughing. I mean, because it's funny, but it's so sad at the same time.
Yes. That the sadder part about that is that I don't think it's sad. That to me is like a kind of happy family life.
Well, maybe that explains what I was about to ask you, which is what draws you to writing characters like this?
Well, it's this like dual feeling of kind of being, you know, miserable or anxious, you know, or a number of feelings that we try to avoid, and at the same time being like kind of self-aware to realize that, you know, A, it's meaningless in the grand scheme of the things that are occurring in the world, and B, it's the feelings aren't really warranted. There's some like a kind of silliness to the feelings. So I guess in a way it's like feeling bad but not taking that kind of seriously.
Well, it seems that most of the stories include some kind of, or they are maybe some kind of character studies. I mean, is that just kind of what you're drawn to naturally, or was it something that you're just particularly good at because of your deep experience as an actor?
Yeah, probably both. I think that my kind of first inspiration whenever I'm writing is just a funny idea, like a mother explaining the ballet to the son, and she's really just kind of letting out personal gripes, like we just read. But when I start writing, I have this kind of like almost just guilty conscience that tells me, no, you have to include a character here and you have to make them sad, probably because of my acting training. You know, you're doing, you know, trained as an actor to do, some kind of silly comedy, but you're trained to imbue it with personal stakes, with emotional realism, even in the kind of silliest of circumstances.
Mm. Well, I mean, speaking of that, you actually start the book with a series of funny restaurant reviews that are written by a young boy who's watching his mother kind of fall apart. I mean, there's a lot of falling apart going on,
right?
In these stories. Why did you want to start that way?
Well, I just love this character. I thought it would be funny initially just to write a series of restaurant reviews by kind of a rich kid who's taken around to places that usually only adults go to, and to just see the world through his eyes. But as I started writing it, I realized that his circumstances would probably be pretty dire if he was in the particular circumstances that he's in, which is that his parents just got divorced, and the only way his mother could maintain her nice lifestyle is to take the boy around, because the father would pay for it if she takes the boy to these fancy restaurants. So it just creating that circumstance for him necessarily warranted a sad context. The sadder she is, the funnier the stories are, because you're seeing his kind of innocent perspective watch this woman who's an adult woman dealing with serious things kind of devolve. And it's funnier because you're emotionally invested. And in my experience as an actor, that's always been the case. The more emotionally you invested are, are invested into a character, the funnier it is.
Yeah. Well, while we have you, can I just ask you a little bit about some of the other projects that you've
sure.
that you've been part of recently? Because, you know, we've had Jason Segel on the show a couple times, and he, of course, is your co-star in the movie The End of the Tour.
Oh, right.
Which is a movie about David Foster Wallace. Jason right. Segel plays him, and you play Rolling Stone reporter David Lipsky. And Lipsky gives Wallace a copy of his own book, of Lipsky's book, The Art Fair, which had just come out but wasn't getting a lot of attention. And here's what happens.
I mean, I did debate whether or not I should do this.
Why?
I don't know. Don't you think it's some kind of kid brother sort of thing to do?
No.
Hey, isn't it at all reassuring to have a lot of people read you and, you know, say that you're a really strong writer?
It'll be interesting to talk to you in a few years.
Why do you say that?
My experience is that that is not so.
Jesse Eisenberg, can you tell us a little bit about that scene and what it was also like, you know, working on that movie?
Yeah. You know, it's this classic thing of, you know, you meet your hero and you assume that they not only have it all figured out but that they're really happy with the success that you have yet to achieve, and then you discover that they are more terrified than you are. And you know, I think if the clip continued, I think he would say something along the lines of you know, my fear is like the more people love you, the more fear you have of becoming a fraud. It's really true. I've had the experience, you know, kind of in both ways. I've had the experience of meeting people that I thought if I only achieved what they achieved, I would be happy. I could rest. I could take a break. And of course, you discover that's not the case. And then I met people who feel that way about me, who feel, oh, you know, you're doing the thing that I want to do. Is it great? And I said, no, you're paranoid at all times that, you know, you're not going to be able to do something well, or you're not going to work consistently, or whatever it is that got you to this place is gone, or it's changed, or it's fleeting, or somebody else has it. You know, I'm a big basketball fan, and I think, like, oh, you know, Michael Jordan was regarded as the best basketball player. There was no question when he was playing, and even now, still no question. And all he wanted to do was be good at baseball. You know, so I think everybody has that kind of pressure that you find and put on yourself that you could still do better. And even for the guy who's literally the best, regarded as the best basketball player in the world, he feels like, you know, he needs to do this other thing. And how could I know somebody, you know, Deion Sanders plays two sports. How come I only play one? This is mortifying. You know, I think so. I don't think it ends. I think it only ends if you choose to have it end. And that could end at any accomplishment. You know, you could accomplish one, you know, small thing or nothing and decide that you're going to be content. Or conversely, you're going to, you know, or you could accomplish anything that a human being can choose to accomplish in their lifespan and never be satisfied.
Jesse, if I may say, it's so gratifying to hear that someone like you has the same fears that we average people have.
You know, you're welcome. I think the world was ready for that from me, and you know, that's my gift to humanity.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk for a minute about some of the, like, I mean, you've done a pretty great array of work because there's a movie that's coming out in early next year that you're also in, which is like kind of on the opposite end of the extreme from The End of the Tour. And mm-hmm. that movie is Batman versus Superman, and you are Lex right. Luthor. And we've got a clip
yes.
from the film, so let's listen.
Okay.
Do you know the oldest lie in America, Senator?
The devils don't come from hell beneath us. They come from the sky.
So, first of all, what was it like being on a blockbuster like that?
Very similar to The End of the Tour, really. I mean, it feels, you know, strange to say because the movies are contextualized so differently. They're advertised differently. They look different. They sound different. They come out in different theaters. But the acting is really similar. I mean, you're on a set. you're with other actors, you know, in a lot of the scenes I'm with Holly Hunter, who does more independent movies than she does movies like that. So, you know, you're with people who are familiar to you doing the same thing, and you're doing scenes, and the scenes that I have in the Batman movie are phenomenal scenes. They're great, dramatic, interesting scenes full of emotion. And I think if you're doing a lot of jobs on movies, they differ from movie to movie. But for an actor, for some reason, just the nature of how actors kind of get treated and how, you know, actors get – how actors work, it's kind of similar. And when I say how actors get treated, I just mean actors have time on an independent movie to ask for another take. Oh, can I try something differently? Even though it's a faster-paced process because there are fewer days, actors still kind of – you know, have the luxury to try different things.
But in this film, though, I mean, you're Lex Luthor. You are like the epitome of the of a cartoon villain, which certainly has it occupies an entirely different world than, say, when you're acting in a film that's based on actual people, which you've done, of course, not only with The End of the Tour, but with The Social Network as well.
Right. But my requirement in a movie like Batman and to play a character like that is to make it as uncartoony as possible. It's to make it as real as possible. So it's the same job description as playing a real person. You know, it's take this kind of, you know, this dramatized idea of a person and make it as realistic as possible. Make the character relatable, make the character understandable, give the character emotional shades that might contradict how, let's say, the hero thinks of the character, and keep it real. That's the same whether you're doing a kind of a character based on a real person. You're trying to keep that character version real as you are doing a comic book character.
Yeah. Well, so I mentioned The Social Network, which of course is the movie about Mark Zuckerberg and the founding of Facebook. We've got to play a little bit of sound of that because you were absolutely extraordinary in that movie. So let's listen.
Do you think I deserve your full attention?
I had to swear an oath before we began this deposition, and I don't want to perjure myself, so I have a legal obligation to say no. I think if your clients want to sit on my shoulders and call themselves tall, they have a right to give it a try, but there's no requirement that I enjoy sitting here listening to people lie. You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount. The rest of my attention is back at the offices of Facebook, where my colleagues and I are doing things that no one in this room, including and especially your clients, are intellectually or creatively capable of doing. Did I adequately answer your condescending question?
It's Jesse Eisenberg playing Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network. What was that like, trying to occupy the Zuckerberg brain?
The real guy, if you watch him, is seems like a kind of good-natured guy. You know, my requirement was to kind of, as I said, kind of provide a dramatic version of that person as created by Aaron Sorkin, who's a great writer. Although the character is really full of rage for a lot of the movie, and it's impossible to kind of do that for months and not, you know, end up kind of becoming consumed with feelings like that. But that's the nature of the job, and I kind of like indulging in that way if it's possible and it doesn't ruin the movie.
Did Mark Zuckerberg ever talk to you about what he thought of your portrayal of him?
No. But I mean, I can only imagine it must be the most uncomfortable thing in the world to have, you know, a movie about you, and especially a popular movie about you, because, you know, that tends to become the image that people think of. You know, movies, especially kind of like popular culture, you know, movies that enter the pop culture, you know, usually cast a broader shadow than reality. Although I suppose with his kind of, you know, successes, I'm sure he'll ultimately, you know, come to overshadow us.
If not already, right?
Exactly.
But finally, I'm just wondering, what do you think, to get back to your book, which is the real reason why we're talking, what is it that also having, you know, writing as a major part of your career, what does that allow you to do that, say, just exclusively focusing on acting wouldn't have allowed you to do?
Probably maintain some kind of sanity, because as an actor, you know, even an actor that's consistently working and appears, you know, to the outsider as you know, very successful, prolific, still has a lot of downtime. It's just the strange nature of the job. You know, you act in a movie, and then a year later it comes out and there are posters with your face on it, which gives the public the illusion that you're making an effort, but actually you took those pictures a year ago. And you know, if you don't find other things to do, I think it'll probably be easier to go nuts, or at best bored. So I fill my time doing things that are equally interesting to me. So I stay busy. It allows me to not feel like I'm kind of at the mercy of an unstable industry. And also it's the thing that I'm most interested in doing.
Well, Jesse Eisenberg's fiction debut is Bream Gives Me Hiccups and Other Stories. He'll be discussing it tomorrow night at the Brattle Theater. We've got information at our website about the event at radioboston.org. Jesse Eisenberg, it was such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, when we come back, we'll speak with Professor Ilan Stavins about the hallucinogenic experience in the Amazon that changed his life. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.